Hello, Cinnabar Moths, or any kind of moth you'd like to be. Welcome to the Writer's Triangle, Cinnabar Moths podcast about all things publishing and books. Today we're here with Katie Groom, author of the Cardinal Moon Saga. Hello, Katie. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm excited to have you. And are you excited about the release of Gibbous Moon, the sequel to Fixed Moon?
I am, because it has gone beyond what I thought I could ever achieve, so I'm very excited about it.
So I want to jump right into asking about it. You know, with Gibbous Moon, you go into the events that happen right after the events of Fixed Moon. Without giving anything away, do you think Gibbous Moon is a good standalone read, or do you think that readers should do Fixed Moon first and then to go on to Gibbous Moon?
So, I think if you read them out of order, it could still be understood. But it's so hard to discuss things, you know, without giving things away. But I'm assuming that if people are listening to this, they've already read Fixed Moon, maybe. But I think the story can be still understood. But I just think it'll give a feel of preferring maybe certain romantic pairings over others, as some characters heal in the aftermath of the ending. It's just so hard to explain without spoilers. So maybe I could like say gentle spoilers from here on out, you know, or something like that. But there's major plot points in the story that like I can't mention or whatever. But that being said, like there's, I don't know if I can mention this, but like there's a major like big story series that I like. I love Twilight. And I read New Moon. I know it's too many moons, I guess, in this thing. But anyways, I read the second book first, and all it did was make me be Team Jacob more than Team Edward. So maybe something like that would happen. But I still think you can fully understand the story if you would read it on its own. But I also think you'd miss some key points. But I don't think it would be completely completely unable to decipher what's going on at all. So,
okay. So you'd recommend that people read the first book in the series, but if they wanted to start with Gibbous Moon, they wouldn't necessarily lose everything. It'd still be manageable.
Yeah. I mean, if you go to the bookstore and you can only find one, I mean, man, would it be my dream to have somebody find my book in like a physical bookstore. But, you know, if you can only find the second one, it wouldn't hurt you to start with it. You could still grasp what's going on and stuff like that. But you would just miss, I think, a little bit of the history and things like that.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And as someone who's, you know, read both books, I do think personally that it is a much smoother feeling when it comes to reading from the first book to the second. But if I hadn't read the first book, that it'd probably take me a couple seconds to get grounded, and then from there I'd be like, okay, a lot's happening really fast, but yeah, I'm caught up.
Yeah, I think that's where the hesitation is for me, because you get thrown into something, a major event, and you're like, what is going on? And it might be confusing, but once you get past that major event, you could probably figure out what's going on. It's just like action right away. Right. So yeah. And a lot of, it's not just like action. It's like almost like confusion and, you know, a little bit of grief and just like, what is going on? And even the characters don't even know what's going on in that instance, you know? So could be a little confusing, but I think you could get your bearings, after that. So
yeah, I definitely agree. I think it would just take a little bit to settle, maybe, you know, a chapter, maybe two, and then it would all be smooth sailing from there.
Yeah.
And so with Gibbous Moon, you do make a lot of bold choices with it. Have you always been this fearless, or is this where the characters guided you, or is it a combination of both?
So when you say fearless, I'm assuming you mean with my writing, because in life, absolutely not. I'm not shy about the fact that I have anxiety, which keeps me from doing a lot of things sometimes. So I'm fearful a lot. But with my writing, I'd say both, a little bit of both. There's things that I'm very passionate about that I wanted to include. there are some things that the characters lead me to do. You know, I talk about this a lot, but like the characters are very real to me. It's almost like I live in the world with them, kind of thing. But there's some things, you know, that I really, really wanted to include. For example, there's a side character in this one that, you know, their job is sex work. And I wanted to be clear that sex work is work and it deserves respect. And that might be very bold to some people. You know, but there's also, you know, alternate relationship styles. And I wanted to explore them because they exist in the real, you know, the real world. They exist in the, you know, Cardinal Moon Saga world, everything like that. And with consent, you know, these are very much real types of relationships. They should be respected choices, that kind of thing. And then there's other things that happen, like, you know, randomly, like death by tree, which was just me being really bizarre and something I kind of wanted to include. You know, so, you know, that's just, you know, something that maybe like I'm a little evil in my head a little bit, but you know, just something that came to me that I was like, I have to do this, you know, that kind of thing. So I think it's a mix of both, but I will say that I openly admit that sometimes the characters really, they do guide me. And like, I mean, I think I talked about this in Fixed, when I was talking about Fixed Moon, that when I was writing something for Fixed Moon, I had to rewrite it 4 times because Hugh just kept making the same decision. And I'm like, come on, dude. And then I was just like, I guess I just have to leave it that way because this character is not going to let me do that. And I know that there are authors that are like, you control these characters, you made them, so that's a bunch of malarkey. But for me, I know my characters have a personality and I'm just like, oh, they're not going to make that decision no matter how much I want them to make that decision, you know, that kind of thing. So I guess a little of both, a little of both for it.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And I do think that, you know, you do have this very real relationship with your characters that's one of the things that we actually enjoy here at Cinnabar Moth is how well you know them. And we enjoy like the level of depth of your understanding of them. And so can you share a little bit more about your relationship with the characters? You said you live in the world with them. What does that mean to you?
Like, I love them. Like, I do love my characters, all of them. Even, like, I guess everybody, like, hates Rayon. Like, Stevie's dad, it's like a big joke. Everyone dislikes him. I even love him. You know, they're all a part of me. Whether it's a part of me that's, like, that I already am or a part of me that I want to be kind of thing. Like there's characteristics about some of them that I'm just like, I wish I could be that, you know, so they're that part of me. And then there's some of them that, you know, are really, they are part of me. There's, I think I've even said that like Cade is, he beats in my, I'm sorry, they, I don't know why I do that sometimes. I say he, but I mean, they, and the history with Cade is, and we could probably get into that some other time, but the history with Cade was, they were born and, you know, forced to present as a male and, later became who they are and aren't. And I think that knowing that history is why I sometimes do that. But at any rate, you know, Cade beats in my very heart, like sometimes, you know, but when I created the characters, like when I created Hugh and Zoe and Cade and Stevie, I had notebooks full of notes about them. Favorite outfits, favorite ice cream, favorite food, what they'd wear on a date if they could pick their favorite outfit. I think it's, you know, Hugh pulling his hair back, going into battle is something that is very, very much me. One time, you know, earlier this year, actually, my boss came into my office and was like, oh, my gosh, pulled your hair back. Who upset you today? You know, that kind of thing. And I didn't even realize that, you know, but, you know, that's just something that I do, you know. And but like I said, you know, before, Hugh and Zoe, they've argued with me as I wanted to write things about them. You know, I had to rewrite that one scene with Hugh like 4 times and he eventually won, and that kind of thing. But I know that it's fiction, but I'm telling their story and their truth. And, you know, this is really, I mean, it is Zoe's Truth and Zoe's story, but this is really Hugh's story. So I feel like it's Hugh's story with an additional point of view. And, you know, these books are his story and his truth. And I really do let him kind of take the reins, I guess. Did I even answer that question? I don't even know, because I kind of went off into middle of nowhere with it. But
I think that you did, because the question was, you know, how do you connect to these characters? And I feel like you've described it pretty well.
Okay. I can go on a tangent. So.
Yeah, it sounds like you have had, even before you started writing these characters, in terms of, you know, writing Fixed Moon itself, you still spent a lot of time developing your understanding of who these characters were as people in this world that you're creating.
Yeah, and like some of the side characters don't have as much. I'll be honest about that. Like Zoe's mom, I mean, she's got like a couple pages. Stevie's parents have a couple pages. You know, and they are some that I'd like to delve into more eventually. But you know, but the big four, I knew that I had to have like a lot about them. And I don't know why it was always the big four that I wanted for that, but it's always been like Hugh and Zoe, and then like just, you know, slightly below main character status, Cade and Stevie. And, you know, I mean, Stevie was completely inspired by a Barbie doll that I had when I was, like Totally Rad Barbie or something like that. And she's just a burst full of color and all this hair and geometric ear, like shaped earrings. And, you know, that's Stevie, you know, and she's really a little bit of an homage to my sister, Stephanie, whose nickname is Stevie Bopper. She'll probably kill me for putting that on the internet. But you know what? That's the truth. And, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, I just felt like I have to know the characters. I don't even know why I felt like that, but I'm like, I've really got to know these characters if I'm going to write a character-driven story. Like, how could I not know the characters if I'm going to write about them, you know? So.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense, because how are you going to have their experiences and their interactions with each other and that their journeys feel real if you don't even understand them, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so speaking of the characters' journeys, is there a character whose journey you are most excited about?
So I'm always excited about Hugh's journey, and I, you know, always gush about him. So I'll stay away from that a little bit. But Zoe's story after the events of Fixed Moon is very intense. And I really think that that is exciting, because she really didn't have, you know, she didn't know at all really who she was throughout the entire first book at all, you know. And then you know, after you drown, let's see what's gonna happen there, you know. It gets yeah. pretty quickly, and I think the journey that she takes in that aspect is very intense, and it's very exciting. And then there's a couple new characters that are introduced, and I love them very much, but they don't get as much of a journey in this book. But of course, Cade's journey after finding out that Stevie betrayed them, they have to grieve, and they didn't really get to at the end of the end of Fixed Moon. They didn't really get to do that, because it was all about, you know, helping their friend grieve what happened, you right. know. And there is a grieving process that when a relationship doesn't work out, especially when somebody pulls the crap that Stevie pulled.
Yeah, especially when dealing with betrayal, right?
Right. Like, she betrayed them, you know, in such a big way. And, you know, there is some grief that needs to go through there. And then also, you know, they get a little bit of a reward, you know, kind of in a way. And they start to realize what they deserve. And you know, I just feel like they really do get to come into their own and almost, you know, step into their own little kind of limelight too, as well.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're excited about you know, this,
all of
the germ, all of them. So this might, hearing what you've said so far, I feel like I have an answer to this already. Do you have a favorite character, and is it Hugh?
I'm gonna remove Hugh.
Okay.
Because it is wide knowledge. I just love him. He's my hero. You know, I mean, I've talked about this before. I created him at a time when I just really needed somebody, you know, and it's not fair to, you know, put him against everyone else. And but also I created him so that I could love him with the intention that I was going to love somebody that was flawed and recognize that they weren't perfect. I mean, cause he's got like a temper and, you know, all that stuff, but, and also not see him, you know, with these rose colored glasses. So like I created Hugh to love Hugh. So we got to take him out of that. And, but I'm actually going to pick someone that, if I could be honest, is like such a minor character, but it's Zanga, which really? Is Stevie's mom. She's limitless in what she's going to do to get what she wants, right? So, like, I mean, in Fixed Movement, it is flat out stated she killed somebody to get the king to herself so that she could become queen. You know, like, she didn't care. And she'll do whatever it takes. But also, like, she's very much into the magical world. She studies it. She wants to know everything. And I think that that part of her is very much me, because I don't know everything about this magical world. I created it and I still don't. And I continue to want to write in this world because I want to know more. And I love that about Stevie's mom. And I just love the wealth of knowledge that she has. And she's, you know, super proper and like, you know, sit at this seat at the table, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, don't talk about politics at the table, but she will still do whatever it takes to get what she wants. And I just kind of like her. I love her. And I would actually say she's one of my favorite characters and doesn't get enough page time. So.
Okay. So you have the minor character, actually, who, when we put Hugh aside, that you'd love to explore more and you enjoy kind of their, I guess, their boundless interest in inquisitive nature when it comes to exploring things.
Yeah. Maybe someday I'll write a short story about her. I don't know. So.
Well, you know, if you do, I'm sure that the readers would love it.
Awesome.
Speaking of the readers, we know from the reaction to our PR list and from Book Sirens on Library Thing that you have a nice following. How does it feel to have fans of your work and to know that you have readers of your work?
So, like, that's really thrilling because I never expected that. I still sometimes in my mind go back to the very first bit of feedback on Fixed Moon that I got from someone that wasn't at Cinnabar and they weren't family. And her name's Erica. We actually worked together, Erica and I did back in the day. And she ended up reading an arc of Fixed Moon, like, on the day that they were released. She read it in, like, one day. And she tweeted about it and how much she loved it and stuff. And that little tweet is like, I hold that so close to my heart because that was the first bit of feedback that I ever got, you know, outside of that little circle that had read my book, you know, and my writing, you know, and I just was so scared, but she loved it so much. And I do believe that she even went and got like the arc of Gibbous Moon too, as soon, you know, signed up for that if she, you know, as soon as possible and stuff. And I just it's just so, it's thrilling, it's so, I don't know, it's just such kindness, you know. And I try to stay away from reading reviews because I'm very sensitive, you know. So it's just so nice that people do enjoy it, and because that is more than I ever expected. So, because for very, like, many years, I just kept my writing to myself, so I was the only person to ever read it. So, it's surreal, I suppose. So, yeah.
Okay. So, for you, it's been a positive experience overall, though.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't I don't think there's been anything that I could say was negative. I mean, even like I got a negative review one time that somebody said it was all ROM, no COM. And I was like, that's so cute. I love it. You know, going to use that to sell books, because for me, sometimes one or two star reviews that I read about other books, like, sell them to me, you know, I'm just like, you know, because that means that book just wasn't for that person. You know, it doesn't mean that it was bad. It just means it's not for that person, and maybe it's for me. And I just thought, oh, it's all ROM, no COM was so cute. And I was like, I'm going to use that in something someday, you know? So, you know, I liked it. So it's been good overall for me. I mean, so I don't know how it could be. I mean, I'm sure for some people the experience could be negative, but for me, it's exceeded my expectations of what I had for myself. So, there's that.
Okay, so it sounds like you've been excited by this process, and I'm guessing for you then that having a fan base is a more positive thing. But do you feel any pressure from it, or is it just all good?
So for writing Gibbous Moon specifically, I wrote and completed it before Fixed Moon was released, so no, I had no pressure. you know, and I just say that, like, when I was writing Gibbous Moon, there's one decision that a character makes that I did worry. There's two decisions, but one that a main character makes that I did worry would make fans upset, but it's true to the character, whether the reader wants to believe it or not. So I was like, I'll just go with it. And then I also think, and this might be getting like too in the weeds, but sometimes I write things that might be considered political, and I'm doing air quotes around the word political, if you could hear those or not, I don't know. But like, all art is political, and there's just a couple things that I write that just make it very obvious. There's a decision at the end of this book, Gibbous Moon, that Alvin makes, and our heroes decide they, you know, whether they can support him or not in that decision. And I do feel that it was overtly political. You know, like a statement of something that I have strong beliefs on, but it could be a hot button for other people. So I was actually really cautious about that. And I was even nervous about sending the completed, you know, draft to y'all, because I thought, oh, that might be too hot button. And then I was like, oh, but you know, you guys are always so open about that kind of stuff, you know, so I just was a little bit cautious about that. But that being said, I also want to be clear that I don't feel that Cade's truth about being non-binary is political, although some people that I know have said that it is. Somebody's, you know, Cade is who they are, so they're not doing it for a statement. They are doing it because that's who they are, and they are confident in that person. So I just think, like, I want to be clear that that is not a political statement, no matter how much you want it to be. You know,
Someone's identity is not political. It's just their identity.
Yeah. And but there, that one decision at the end of the book that Alvin makes, I can totally see that that's going to be a hot button issue for some people. And I understand if it rubs people the wrong way a little bit.
Okay. So
that's great pressure. Yes.
Okay, so it sounds to me like there are a couple of things that you're thinking about when it comes to your decision making and how people might respond, but you didn't feel any particular pressure necessarily to change it. Would that be right?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, I think that for when I was writing my own book as well, there are choices that I made throughout when I was writing it that I was like, you know, somebody might not like this, but this is my story, and this is how I want to express it and have it come out. And this is what I want to tell.
Right. And like, it's so hard to talk about it without like being a little more spoilery about it. But like that decision at the end, I was just like, it makes sense for all these characters involved in this. And I just was like, this is the right way to go about it. And it was something that was going on in someone close to me's life at that point, like on a little, you know, an obviously different scale, because, you know, we all don't have magical powers that I know of, you know, thing. But, you know, and I just was like, I want to talk about this because this is something that's going on you know, in the world right now. And I think that it's not, you know, addressed enough. And this is my opinion on it. And it fits with my story. And these are what my characters would do in this situation. So, yeah.
That sounds wonderful. And so with that, you know, you have the different things that you have as talking points that people might be, you know, have reactions about or experience. And then you have the overall story of Gibbous Moon, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are you most excited about, your fans or potential readers of the Cardinal Moon saga? What are you most excited about them experiencing in reading Gibbous Moon?
Ooh. Okay, so it's tough because I'm very excited about this book and I'm very proud of it. I'm excited for the readers to meet Silas and Zariella.
Mm-hmm.
They're new characters and they're both incredible. And then I'm really for everyone to see a little bit about Stevie and the aftermath of her decisions in Fixed Moon. You know, decisions right. have consequences, my friend. And also there's this one extremely creepy scene in the dark forest of Nightbrook that no one should really be going in, that I evil laughed the, and I mentioned this earlier, but I evil laughed the entire way through writing it. I'm not quite sure what that says about me, but the whole time I was writing it, I was like, getting what you deserve kind of situations. So yeah, like there's just the, those little things. And then, you know, obviously I'm excited for them to see, you know, the growth of the characters and, you know, and then also, you know, what the, is lined up for the next part too. So yeah.
Awesome. Sounds like you're excited about the entire book.
Yeah. The whole thing. I'm really proud of it. It was, I am. And I had a really great time writing it. So
I think that's awesome. I always think it's wonderful when authors are excited about their writing and are excited to share it with people. And that those lead to some of the best stories, you know, when people enjoy their own writing and express it and share kind of that energy through their writing as well, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think I'm excited for potential readers and fans of the series to read Gibbous Moon. And sounds like you are too. So we're all excited. So you've talked a little bit about, you know, things in the story, but are there any Easter eggs or surprises for the fans that you can hint at or that you put into the story?
I think it's a nice surprise that I stayed out of Pittsburgh because I usually talk about Pittsburgh and everything that I write. So it became the exception to the rule. I do think it's a nice surprise that we actually do get a little bit of more about that ridiculous line that they have to stand in to register to be a part of the Nightbrook world. Like we actually get to go through that line with a couple of the characters and stuff like that. And I think that thing is kind of ridiculous, but you know that's the politics of that place. And then I also think that there's a fun like little surprise that there's a different kind of magic that isn't sun, earth, or water, even though there's those three witches, those three shrews that sit on that council. You know, there's more magic than what they have, but it doesn't get represented very often. And I think it's nice to see that there's other things. You know, so I guess Easter eggs, I don't really have any because I stayed out of Pittsburgh, but just little surprises here and there.
Well, maybe the Easter egg is that it's not in Pittsburgh, you know?
Right.
Okay, so it sounds to me like the experience that you're writing was less with nods to specific things and more a matter of delving deeper into the world and bringing them deeper into the lore and the experience of living in this story.
Yes. And like what it would be to be able to go to that safe haven of, well, is it really that safe? Nightbrook.
And so going into the story, right, and thinking about it more, do you have a specific thing that you kind of expect fans will love the most about the story or about where you take them with the story? Or are you just kind of open to it without any expectations?
So I'm hoping that they'll love getting to know Zoe and Hugh a little bit independently from one another. It's important to know that a couple are individuals, not just who they are together.
That's true.
And it is interesting to see how much Hugh is really traumatized by Zoe drowning. Well, I guess, well, spoilers if you haven't read Fixed Moon, by Zoe drowning than she is, you know, like she becomes stronger afterwards, but he is just, I mean, obviously he was a mess at the end of Fixed Moon and he is just not over it. And, you know, and you kind of get to continue to see that a little bit. So, yeah.
Yeah, I do think that the experience of them as individuals is a nice experience to have as a reader, to be able to get to know them a bit more as, I think in particular as Zoe as well, we get to know her more as somebody living in the magical world on her own terms, right?
Yeah, like she had no idea. I mean, if you remember from the first book, she had no idea who she was. She had just moved to an entirely new city that she had never wanted to go to before. Like, she just moved to Birmingham, up and moved because her engagement ended. She was completely, you know, in involved in that relationship, and she just didn't know who she was afterwards. It was just her and her stuffed Maltese dog, Judy, you know. And to be real with you, I have a stuffed Maltese named Judy, and that's where that dog got that name. Anyways, she, you know, she didn't know anything about herself. And then she meets this guy, she, you know, and he, you know, she's like, dude, I've never had somebody try to break up with me this dramatically. You know, she didn't believe him. So, you know, and then she gets pulled into this world. So everything in her life is completely upended. She has no idea who she is at all as a person, and she really does get to discover herself, you know, because of this. So in this book.
And so we have, you know, that experience of Zoe in her own, standing on her own two feet in this world that she barely had time to even really process before everything started happening. And in a strange way, things slowed down for her to have a moment to breathe and really kind of find her footing. Whereas on the other end, Hugh, in a lot of ways, already knew himself.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, he had 200 years to figure it out.
Yes. He had a lot of time to figure it out. And so instead, we're discovering him not just in perspective of getting to know him more, but also discovering him as he's changed once again by events happening in his life.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially since he had that mating bond connection and that was torn apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so with Hugh, he's a fan favorite, and we have Zoe, who's also a main character whose story we get to experience a lot more. But I also think that Cade really comes into their own in this book as well. Do you think that Cade will become a rival for Hugh in terms of winning over fans' hearts?
Cade, they are fantastic and so funny. I don't know that those two could ever be rivals, like, in any more than, like, sibling rivalry, you know? I mean, Cade calls Hugh brother regularly, you know, but not in the Hulk Hogan way. He's not like, hey, brother. But he's, you know, like, in like, the, you know, in terms of endearment thing, you know? And they are found family together. And, yeah, sibling rivalry exists, but I just don't think that's what would even happen here in the point of view of the characters. Because you couldn't really love one without the other, I feel like. But that being said, for those that do want more Cade, there is a planned duology. I hope I'm saying that word right, because that's how I've been reading that word in my entire life, duology. Do you ever read, like, a word and you're like, oh, that's not how that's pronounced? Anyway.
Oh, yeah. I've had words like that where I'm like, it has to be this, right? I remember when I was younger, I always thought it was root instead of route.
You know what, though? It is, we won't get into that, but it is depending on where you are from and what you're talking about.
Yeah, so, you know.
It's okay, like Route 66 or Route 66, whatever. But anyways, there's a plan. We do have a plan to have a duology for Cade. And also, Cade, who we all felt horrible for at the end of Fixed Moon, gets a few moments where we get to cheer for them. And by the end of this book, I will say that, like, this book is what really solidified them into my heart, you know. And when I write about Cade, like, my heart beats a little bit faster, you know, that kind of thing. So I, you know, rivals, not more than sibling rivalry, but if you really do fall in love with Cade, they're going to have their own little thing too on the side. So you'll get some focus for them. So, yeah.
Well, that'll be exciting for the fans of Cade to be able to get more Cade.
Yeah.
Oh, my. And so with that, you know, you've got a planned duology or duology. I don't know how it's pronounced either. for Cade. And then we've got, you know, the second book in the Cardinal Moon Saga itself with Gibbous Moon. You mentioned earlier that you wrote Gibbous Moon before Fixed Moon had been released. Is that correct?
Yes. I think even before the arcs might have gone out. I don't even remember. I wrote it in the span of, I believe, December to May. Because in May, I went to Scotland on a trip celebrating that I had finished the the draft and turned it in. So I had written it very quickly. And I do believe it was before the arcs went out. I do. So, yeah.
And so when you're writing that, you know, it's your second book, your first book hasn't been released yet. Did you feel any pressure or any worries about, you know, the release of Fixed Moon coming out, and then will the second book live up to the first book or anything like that? Or what was your experience with that?
Well, it was actually yes and no. Like, so as I mentioned before, I got anxiety. So, like, I always so I was like in a constant state of anxiety. Will Cinnabar Moth like this? You know, will they like where I've taken these characters? You know, that kind of thing. But there wasn't any pressure to live up to like a hype of having, you know, a bestseller or anything, because it hadn't been released, so nobody knew, you know. But like at the same time, I really kind of was thinking, like I mentioned before, like, is this decision going to rub people the wrong way? Will I lose readers over this? And I'm like, no, I don't really think so, you know. And then I was like, if Cinnabar lets it get through, I'm sure that they, you know, if they had a big red flag, they would say, hey, Katie, let's talk about this, you know. But the real pressure was just pressure from me being worried that it would, you get, like, y'all would read it and be like, no.
Yeah, so it sounds to me like your pressure as far as the book living up to the second book living up to the first wasn't really the thing so much as would it get accepted.
Right. Right there. Yep.
And so that, you know, with having anxiety, that does make sense. You, whenever you're doing something, will this turn out the way I want it to? I hope so.
Yeah.
But you've gone through it, right? You've written the first book, you've written the second book. Both of them are, well, Gibbous Moon is about to be released and Fixed Moon is already out. And you've had this experience now. Are you feeling more confident as a writer? Has this process changed you as a writer at all?
Yes. So Fixed Moon was the first full book that I had ever written, ever. So I was clueless as to what I was doing. Clueless. And I'd wager now that I probably have like two or three clues as to what to do. But, you know, I did find it really interesting that writing Gibbous Moon, I had a completely different way to write it. Like, I completely, like, when I wrote Fixed Moon, I wrote it completely out of order. I changed things. There was one part where I got feedback where they were like, we need you to rewrite this part and take this completely out. We have this big suggestion. It's going to change it. And I was like, oh, that's really good feedback. Boom, boom, boom. You know, that kind of thing. With this one, I actually wrote it in order from like the very first thing that you read on the page was the first thing that I wrote, like, and it went in order, and I had never done that before, and I would edit as I went along, and it just was a very different process. And I think, I don't want to say it made a better book, but it just made a better process perhaps for doing it. And then I'm writing book three right now, which we're tentatively, well, the title, you know, can always change, but anyways, I mixed the two processes. But I'm gonna be honest with you that I think I'm subconsciously stalling the completion of that book, because that means letting go of you and being done with that. So, like, I think that, like, you know, I'm like stalling because I don't want to let go of my guy, you know, but you know, I mean, he could always make an appearance in other books, who knows? But anyways, I have, you know, I've kind of mixed the two processes, and I've kind of learned to trust myself a little bit more as a writer, and to also be more of a champion for my own work and things like that too. And so, yeah, it has changed it. It has made me more confident for sure. And that is something that is very impressive in my opinion about myself. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that is impressive. I think that's really great, is that you're finding kind of your groove as a writer, even though it does sound like you're also switching up the process a bit from, you know, each time that you're writing, and you're finding your comfort zone, what feels natural to you. And I think that's really important, you know, it's part of the self-discovery process that allows you to feel a lot more comfortable in your writing, so that it's not as fraught.
Yeah.
And so with, you know, your style with your, I guess not style, but your process of approaching writing that might be different, but something that is consistent with you is that both books share the fact that you don't shy away from writing the trauma in a way that's personal. You don't shy away from really getting into these emotional and these intimate moments with these characters, both for, you know, their positive and their negative experiences. With that, are you drawing from your own life experiences, or where does this intimacy with these experiences come from?
So I would say from a little bit of my own and a little bit of those around me and things like that. I'll be honest that, like, and this is going to, I don't know how this is going to come across, but I haven't had a lot of what people would call real trauma. Like, I've had some, but like some people would probably, if I would tell them, you know, I went through this or this, they'd be like, oh, shut up, you know, just get over it kind of thing. I mean, I lived a life of, you know, suck it up cupcake, you know, growing up, you know, kind of thing. But, you know, I think part of it is that these characters are a part of me, so I know how I would react, but I also know my characters very well, so I know how they would react. And then the truth of it is whether or not people would consider my trauma as real trauma, it's trauma to me, and it was awful for me, and I do draw from that. You know, sometimes art does imitate real life, and, you know, but sometimes I take it, like I mentioned earlier, that decision that I'm trying not to, like, give spoilers about at the end of Gibbous Moon, you know, that was something that was, that I went, you know, had to go through with someone very close to me, you know, over the course of several years, and, you know, and wishing that a different decision could have been made, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, just witnessing how that drains somebody kind of thing. And, you know, at the end of Fixed Moon, when Hugh goes through the loss of Zoe and that big, long, you know, point where he couldn't even, you know, take a shower, you know, he didn't, you know, that I had grief at the end of a marriage that I had to address myself, you know, that kind of thing. And whether or not something's your decision, you know, when you're ending a relationship, that doesn't mean that you're not going to grieve that ending, you know, and that's, you know, something that I had to battle personally. And I really drew on that when I wrote that kind of stuff. So it comes from a lot of places. But yeah.
It does sound like it comes from a mix of experiences. Something I do want to say, just from my stance, and I know this is a stance that we at Southern Barbell share, is that people's traumas are real, no matter how much other people might say it's quote-unquote light or not that serious. People's lived experiences and what they find traumatic and heavy for them is genuine, and it's still trauma. And so I think that that's something that I personally feel about it. And I do think that, you know, drawing from these experiences, because the weight of the emotion inside ourselves, even if it wouldn't have had that same weight for somebody else that experienced it, well, they're not the one who experienced it.
Exactly. Not everyone's lived experiences are the same. And and that's something that I remind people constantly when they say, you know, something isn't real, or, you know, suck it up or whatever. It's like, you didn't live that, you know, you didn't live that experience, so you can't judge, you know. But yeah, I agree with that. I mean, and I hope that it didn't come across that I was making that, you know, light of that, but I, you know, trauma is trauma.
It didn't come across that way. I just wanted to share my own stance on it in support of what you're saying about it.
So. Okay.
With that, you know, you've gone through the experience now with writing, you know, these very intimate scenes and writing some of the lighter, because there are some lighter scenes in mm-hmm. the books as well, and that full gamut of emotions, right? Mm-hmm. And you've written now two full-length books. Do you feel like you've found your voice as an author?
I think a little bit. See, the thing is, I think I found my style. I think I kind of find the books that I enjoy writing, the things that I want to keep writing. Yeah, I want to continue to grow. I want to keep improving. I think the more I do it, the better I'm going to get. But like, I have found what I enjoy. Also, totally my style is like way too many M dashes and things like that. But that's what you're going to get with Katie. Yeah, I think I found a style that I like, and I think that if somebody enjoys my style, they'll continue to enjoy, you know, the way that I write, because I have been told it's very conversational sometimes, to the point that it's just like, I feel like I could be reading it, you know, having this conversation with you kind of thing, you know, and I've kind of always been that way, but I think I've gotten a lot better, and I just, you know, I want to continue to get better and continue to improve and grow with myself, with my characters, and with my readers too. So yeah.
I think that's a wonderful message. And I will say, as someone who's read the first book and read the second, I do feel like I have seen, even across just, quote unquote, just two full length novels, a shift in and a growth in you as a writer, as a reader of your work.
Thank you.
So I will say that I personally have enjoyed following the journey with you and being part of this process with you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And so with you, you know, finding your voice, having this increase in confidence and everything, do you feel like you can identify as an author?
Yeah. Anyone that has written has authored something, and I'm an author. And I'm very proud of that. And I was scared of that. At first, but you know what? Yes, I'm gonna confidently say yes.
That's awesome. I'm glad you have that confidence to be able to say it. And you know, that's another sign of the growth, right? Before you didn't have that confidence, now look at you.
Yeah.
And so with that, you know, you're an author, capital A author, right? Mm-hmm. You've got your two novels out. You've got the duology that you're also working on for Cade. You've got, you know, book three as well, right? Looking ahead, what are you going to do next? What's on the agenda for you?
So I am currently working on book three. And I'm like, when I complete that, that's when I'm going to really start working on Cade's story. In between books two and three, there's between the release of book two and the release of book three, there is author in residence that I'm doing with the literary mag for, I just shortened the word magazine to mag, grow up. Anyways, the literary magazine. And there's some short stories in there that are actually going to supplement the Cardinal Moon saga. So I hope that the fans enjoy those. And there's one that's a standalone with a really cute joke about the word elevator, and I love it. right now I'm really working on book three, and I want to make it fantastic and then a good ending to, round up Hugh's story, and slowly get to say goodbye to focusing on him so much, and then get to have a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to writing Cade's story, because once I think during the press tour for Fixed Moon, I got to write something in Cade's point of view, and that was the moment that I was like, yes, absolutely, I can totally write something in Cade's point of view. They are super sassy, and I love it. It's so much fun. So yeah,
we always love a good sassy character.
Yeah, I am they are just so confident as to who they are, and I love it. I just love it. So yeah, looking forward to that.
I'm looking forward to it as well, and I'm also really excited for the release of Gibbous Moon coming out this upcoming Tuesday. I know your fans are too. And so, Katie, I'd like to thank you for talking with me today and for being on the Writer's Triangle.
Thanks for having me.
And to all of our beautiful moms, thank you for listening. Be sure to buy Gibbous Moon coming out October 3rd. And before we go, though, Katie, can you tell us where everybody can find you as far as social media and everything?
Yes. So on the site formerly known as Twitter or X, it's Katie_writes_. On Goodreads, Instagram, and TikTok, it is Katie Groom Writes. And on Blue Sky, it is Katie G Writes. And I think that's all of them.
Wonderful. And for everybody listening, be sure to visit cinnabarmouth.com to check out the transcripts. And we'll also have the links to Katie's social media. Once again, Katie, thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. Thank you.
And for now, though, bye-bye.